thanks to the law firm Cundorian Murad for sponsoring the show. They will help you to draft a last will and testament, set up a living trust, put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. I got to say, I'm very surprised as it's 5 o'clock here, D.C. time, 1 hour ahead of the trade deadline, and still nothing on the Josh Bell front. I'm not nervous or worried that they're not going to trade Bell. I was told yesterday he had a pretty decent market and that they would be moving him. If somehow they don't, that would be shocking and annoying.
I agree with all that, yeah.
He's been awesome for 50 games. I mean, he actually has legitimate value. If you need a left-handed power hitter, the DH and platoon for you, he's your guy. And you're seeing all these other players get traded today that have not played at the same level as him, hitting over 300 with an OPS close to 900 for the last 50 games. My guess is they're holding on as long as they can to pit some teams against each other and hoping as the well dries up on bats, maybe the price goes up toward the end.
That's certainly my hope, yeah.
But they have to trade him. Gore, I'm not expecting them to trade. I think it would be a huge success if they did, just building the system up again and trying to expedite the never-ending seeming rebuild now. But Bell, to me, is like, Gore, we could debate about will they do it, won't they? It's unlikely, probably, but it'd be nice. There's no excuse not to trade Josh Bell. You have to find a way to do that.
Agreed, especially just such an affordable deal, not bolted down. Great dude, great clubhouse presence, you know, awesome in the community, but this is one of those guys that a contending team could use. He is a really good bench bat, or someone that could, you know, if you're a National League team or you're playing matchups, could DH for, as you said, for a meaningful ball club? Absolutely, they should trade him.
More on the Nats as anything breaks here in this final hour leading up to the deadline. Jaden Daniels spoke in Ashburn today, though. I wanted to go through some of the cuts of Daniels at the podium, and I want to have a convo about him because, oddly, with the Terry McLaurin fiasco unfolding, we really haven't gotten to talk much Daniels in camp this year. It's been very quiet on that front on the airwaves, and there's not a lot to say. He's awesome, and hopefully he stays healthy, and if he does, the team's going to be pretty good. And if he plays at a really high level, the team's going to be great. It's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
But because he spoke today, there's a couple of things I wanted to pull out of this and talk about. So let's start with what he said about the little things that he can do now in year two in this offense that a year ago at this time, as you're just trying to figure out how to play in the NFL, maybe was not a focus.
I would just say more so playing the situation game-like, as game-like as possible. Like first and second downs, try not to take a sack. If it's not there, throw the ball away. Work on the second play. Never know, I might be lucky enough to break a sack one time and keep my eyes downfield and let those guys work. But other than that, always just trying to make it as game-like as possible.
So I'm going to circle back to this because this is going to be a major talking point for me on Daniels today and every day moving forward. But the idea of leaving the pocket and keeping your eyes downfield to remain a passer has long been one of my big critiques and something that he needs to continue to get better at. And it's going to separate his year two development from what he was in year one for me. If he is able to continue to make strides, because from week one last year against Tampa, where he just didn't do that at all, to the end of the season where he was constantly doing it, he kept getting better and better and better. But I still think there's another gear there. There's more growth there. It's something he needs to continue to do. So that's something for me that is a major area of possible growth for him.
I think that's a pretty astute one, right? Where you've been the most athletic guy on the field for your whole life. Now, maybe not necessarily the case set week in and week out, right? There are some hunters there in the secondary, linebackers running after you, et cetera. So you're so used to being able to get out of that pocket, and that's a guaranteed 15, 20 some odd yards, et cetera. But to me, that's where some of those big plays are going to happen. You look at some of the advanced numbers, right, that kind of tell you where the targets are and where the passes are. Some of that is the offense he plays in, that horizontal raid as part of Cliff Kingsbury's system, wherever you want to call it. But to me, his intended air yards kind of tells the story. They wanted a lot of quick stuff close to the line of scrimmage. They wanted things to make it easier on him in year one. Year two, that number can go up. I mean, you look at guys like Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Brock Purdy, Josh Allen, all more than a half yard or more, longer deep down the field targets on average than Jaden Daniels last year. Add that to your game. Have some of those strikes instead of taking the first one that's open underneath, that second one that might take an extra beat or throw some anticipation. Again, part of that's the offense you're in, and it's not a complaint. It's just a, hey, this fader could be turned up a little bit. You could go a little bit deeper with some more of your pass. It doesn't mean you start slinging Hail Marys and do some sort of crazy Madden 96 type deal, but it's basically, a way to say, instead of nothing but short and easy, add some layers of complication to it, get some trust from Cliff Kingsbury, I think that number could go up.
Well, you know what that means. We've got some Nats trade deadline news.
Here we go.
And it's the move you've all been waiting for. Alex Cole has been traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So, kidding aside, for the Dodgers, this actually is a nice little addition of a guy who can play all three outfield spots. He has very high quality at bats. He does not really chase. He's got a really good idea of what he's doing at the plate in terms of discipline. Draws some walks, gets on base at a 750 OPS, was hitting around 280 at the time of this deal. But I actually love this for the Nats. You'll get a minor leaguer back, whatever. Here's why I like this. They have so many good young outfielders that should be playing in the big leagues. Dylan Cruz is rehabbing, will be back up here, should be playing every day. Dalen Lyle needs at-bats, needs opportunities. Robert Hassel is killing the ball in AAA. He's hitting almost 330 since getting sent down to the minor leagues, and on the year is hitting over 300 at AAA. He deserves to be in the major leagues. Now, when all these guys are up, Wood playing left, Young playing center a bunch, maybe every day, maybe not, Cruz, Hassel, Lyle, there's already too many outfielders for those three spots. But what I couldn't have down the stretch, with all due respect to Alex Cole, is continuing to play the 30-year-old regularly. Even though offensively he might be one of the most advanced guys that they have in terms of the quality of the AB. So to move him actually makes a ton of sense. This is a guy at one point in time they got off waivers. He's been here the last three seasons, up and down from the minors, mainstay this year. So I like this. No reason not to move him, create some more space for the young outfielders they have in the org.
I like Alex Cole. That's a good dude. Seriously, that's a veteran. That's a guy that's remade himself, that he was one of the dudes that's on the forefront using VR and the goggles to see pitches. And he was mentioned heavily in that one article that the Post did. Spencer Nussbaum, I think, wrote it about where the Nats are and using some of the advanced technology and how behind they are in some spots. And it's up to each individual guy if he wants to do it or not. Credit to Alex Cole. Good dude. I can't have 30-year-olds in the way of my kids for a team that's going to lose 95 games. That's just where I fall on that. And so in general, I was talking about this as related to something else before the show with our guy, Ben the Red. And I said, if my manager, if my coaches can't do what I want them to do, I'll remove the temptation. Right? Remember in Moneyball when Billy Bean was feuding with Art Howe and he kept starting Carlos Pena instead of Scott Hatterberg at first base. So he removed the temptation. I traded Carlos Pena today, the guy that's going to be Rookie of the Year. Pretty unprecedented because I want you to play Scott Hatterberg. That shouldn't always go that way with, you know, general managers trading guys out of spite or anger. But that's kind of my point here. I need to remove the temptation for this ball club to be slightly better in the short term with Alex Cole getting some at-bats down the stretch. That needs to be Robert Hassel. That needs to be Dylan Cruz. That needs to be Dalen Lyle.
So what I would do for the rest of the season in the outfield, by the way, Cruz is your everyday left fielder. Excuse me, Wood is your everyday left fielder. When Cruz gets called back up, he is my everyday center fielder. I am moving him to center.
Yep.
And then in right field, Hassel and Lyle are both left-handed hitters, so it's not like you can platoon them. So if you want to have Lyle, because he's been in the big leagues already and he's playing okay, you want to have him as kind of the primary right fielder, that's fine. Hassel can play center field. He can play right field. He could even play left field. I would actually have a rotation where after I trade Josh Bell in the next 50 minutes, those guys are all DHing a couple times a week possibly too to be getting major league at-bats. Specifically, like Wood, you can get off his feet long season, couple of times a week.
Yeah, I would DH him a decent amount.
You could DH him, I think, twice a week. Any more than that would probably be excessive to me. But if you DH him twice a week, Cruz coming back from an oblique and an injury, you could DH him once a week. I think Lyle, you could have DH once a week. Like, that opens up 4 days a week in the outfield for some combination of Hassel and Jacob Young.
Mm-hmm.
Young, to me, down the stretch here, as good as he is defensively, just becomes the get-in-where-you-fit-in kind of fifth outfielder for the moment. And then Wood, Cruz, and Lyle and Hassel kind of splitting time are the priority ahead of him. But I would be playing those kids as often as possible. Young, with the lowest ceiling of the group, probably loses playing time. Otherwise, Cruz comes back, needs to play. And I'm also showcasing Lyle and Hassel because I think there's a really good chance you end up moving one of those guys this offseason. They're a little bit redundant. You could pick which one you like more. I believe more in Lyle's bat, but I like Hassel a lot as a player. I think they're both going to be good big leaguers. But I would package one of those two and another player, whether that's one of your relievers, Jose Ferrer or something, or, you know, a minor leaguer. I would go get a controllable starting pitcher. And I think you might be able to do that But you got to showcase those guys and start getting them some ops, some at-bats, and show them off in the big leagues and hope they play well.
I think it's a smart point. Yeah, for me, I'm a little bit more hassle over Lyle, but I think it's, you know, eye of the beholder on that one. Jacob Young, to me, I love that dude. That's as cool a guy as you're going to find, and I root for him individually. He's sort of lost his seat, as far as I'm concerned. Think of it like F1, right, where I've got enough prospects. I only have a couple spots for him. A guy that hasn't run very effectively, caught stealing 9 times, only 10 stolen bases. If he was running wild this year, 30, 35 steals, you go, okay, I can live with absolutely zero power or zero production from that spot. He's a great center fielder. I'm sorry, that's not enough for me. I need to generate way more offense from that center field spot. I know it's not a premium offensive position, but I can't have negative. I can't have zero out there from my center fielder.
By the way, I just looked it up. Alex Cole's chase rate, 97th percentile in baseball. Whiff percentage, 86th percentile. Strikeout rate, 83rd percentile. Walk rate, 77th percentile. So if it feels like Alex Cole draws a lot of walks, doesn't strike out, doesn't chase, doesn't swing and miss,
that feeling's correct.
It's because all of those things are accurate. But that is the Nats news here with 46 minutes to go ahead of the trade deadline. That is trade number 5 so far that Mike DiBartolo has pulled off in sending Alex Cole to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Still awaiting word on Bell and Mackenzie Gore. Let's get back into Jaden Daniels, though, working our way through his press conference today on how he is evolving as a leader. It's hard when you're a rookie to just take over the room. There's a little bit of a side eye that you're going to get where people are going to say, all right, dude, I know you were the number 2 overall pick, but put some pelts on the wall first. There's a lot of pelts on the wall for one season now.
There's a standard that we set on the offensive side, and I'm the one that's got to uphold the standard. And that's if guys are false starting, you know, the next guy up, you know, stuff like that. And even for me, it's like holding myself accountable. If I mess up, I'll look to Zach. I'll look to guys like that to hold me accountable, too. But, I mean, that's just holding leadership-wise, like not letting nobody fall underneath the standard.
So I like that a lot. I've seen Jaden Daniels many times after plays go up and talk to guys. My guess is occasionally he's telling them, hey, that was my bad. Like, you ran the perfect route. Do that again. I'll hit you. And sometimes he's probably telling them, hey, man, I need you to break it off at 11 yards, not 12. Or I need you to separate quicker. I'm in the pocket. I'm getting pressured. You got to not mess around at the point of the, you know, top of the route. There's probably all kinds of conversations that had. But I just like that, you know, that Matt Ryan on Hard Knocks that we always talk about going and talking to Julio Jones. And I remember talking to Kirk O'Chain's cousins about this years ago. It took him, and his situation was different because you're a fourth rounder. You're kind of the Robin to Griffin's Batman. It was a weird, they didn't really buy in on you. But it took him years before he really felt like he could take full ownership and just, it was his, and he could go grab a face mask and yell at somebody, Tom Brady style. I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is going to be doing that, but I think he's confident enough to. And that's the beauty of going second overall, being a Heisman Trophy winner, owning a building from day one, being a top 5 type guy.
There's a fine balance too, right? Where if all you're doing is doing that, then nobody's in your corner. You're just yelling at people, right? But when Brady did it for all those years, everyone knew that was the first guy in the facility. That was the worker. That was the relentless, tireless competitor that never turned it off. You put enough deposits in the bank, then you can grab a face mask. And that's what Daniels is building. He built it all in year one. Everybody saw the work. Everyone saw that it wasn't just one time for Instagram where you showed up before the sun came up. This is your habit. And when you make a habit of being a true professional and working your you-know-what off, guys will buy in and guys will follow you.
Let's go to cut 11 from Jaden Daniels today in his press conference. This is the one that I think we can really isolate and discuss in more detail with callers. Him comparing himself to a year ago.
Yeah, I think so. Just like I said, just being more comfortable in the offense, another year under my belt, under the system, and trying to understand what Cliff is calling, what we want to accomplish as an offense, and I got different tools in my tool belt, as Coach OG Johnson, Bobby Johnson would say, having tools in my tool belt to get to different protections, get to different runs versus certain looks. So yeah, most definitely a night and day.
You won't care about this. I've never heard Bobby Johnson referred to as OG. He's the second person I've heard do that today. You're going to hear in the Brandon Coleman interview I got after practice today, he refers to the O-line coach, Bobby Johnson, as OG. And I was like, who's he talking about? Then I realized it's got to be Bobby Johnson. Now Jaden Daniels did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We got this is a nickname.
It's a developing situation.
OG. So it's a reference to a song. There's a song called OG Bobby Johnson, and yeah, it's a reference to that.
Ooh, look at Derek.
Oh, so this is a hip hop style song.
This
would be a hip hop song. Yes.
Who's the composer? Was it Mozart? Who did it exactly? Can I play it for my kids in the car so they get smarter?
Is it part of the Rolling Stones box set? Yeah.
Who does this song with OG Bobby Johnson? Anywho, can you tell us more about it?
I got nothing. I'm trying to get Ben to do it because Ben's the younger guy and should know. That's his era of
Ben
music.
Ben the Red? Is he in on this? OG Bobby Johnson?
I'm looking up who the artist is, and it just said it's like Q-U-E. And I don't even know who that is. I just know the song.
Oh, you're familiar?
I'm very familiar
with it. So how does it, like when they say that part, what do they say? Or how does it go?
It goes, OG Bobby Johnson.
Interesting.
Talking about the old Giants offensive line coach?
It was very common to see in like sport edit videos of like a hard hit or something like that. That would be the song that would play. Like 2013 me on Vine, the new app.
It's that old? So I should know this, I feel like.
It says release 2014, actually, but
Dad,
around that time.
Pull the song up.
All right, give me a second.
Let me hear this. So I've never heard this, though, before today. Brandon Coleman this morning, Jaden Daniels now, OG Bobby Johnson. I guess that's his nickname in the building.
So there's a movie called South Central, where there's an OG Bobby Johnson is a former gang member who passes away. I guess in the movie. Spoiler
South
alert.
Central.
Yeah, the movie's called South Central.
Don't be a menace.
No, that's the comedy version.
You're right. That was my jam. Well, drinking your juice in the hood or something like that. I used to, that's a great film, by the way.
But funny.
It's so good.
It's really good.
So is the song based on the movie
again? I'm discovering all this in real time.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'm realizing I shouldn't have even brought this up, if I'm being very honest with our
listening
audience.
You regret kind of stepping into this bear trap here?
So, yeah, any acknowledgement of the things we don't understand, we should probably just let go. But it's just weird to me that's twice I heard it.
Well, that is weird.
You've never heard anything. And then twice in 4 hours, it's like, I'm supposed to know he's OG Bobby
Johnson. This to me is interesting, and it's better than when every like reporter that's talked to a guy one time just sort of casually uses his nickname forever.
Yes.
Like where we've all known it. Like DeAndre Hopkins, that's perfectly fine. That's a potential Hall of Famer. Everyone was just like, well, I was talking to Nuke, were you? You spoke to DeAndre Hopkins. See what I'm saying? Like there've been a bunch of guys that have come through here, and everyone will just, they're so casual so quickly. Because they heard it one time.
Don't call him Nuke. I think we got something here. Let's listen. Hanging with the killers in the projects. Play the water barrel, keep fighting. Catching the chicken looking from behind. OG, Bobby, Josh. Oh, I do remember the cadence, Bobby, actually. OG, Bobby, Josh. OG, Bobby, Josh. I definitely remember the cadence. Just the way that it said.
Huh.
Probably is on like a highlight reel of like... Watching Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt's one game at Arizona, and it's like that between runs or something.
I just got nostalgia just listening to that.
Right.
Because that was the first time I've heard that song in probably 8 years.
Yeah. Nostalgia, by the way. Sorry.
What?
That's not nostalgia, dude. You're a child.
He can still get nostalgia.
Well, that's what it's from 8 years ago when I was 9. Like, nostalgia's decades, bro.
That's
I'm not allowed to reminisce on things from my past and call it nostalgia.
No, it's different.
I'm not old enough.
No, it's different.
Throwback, I think.
Yeah, when you're 5 and 6 years old, like in the early 2000s, by the way, which is really, really upsetting to even think about. Yeah, that's nostalgia. Like, that was a song that you haven't heard in a few minutes.
Okay,
that's all I'm saying.
Can I just clarify a question?
Yeah.
So nothing in my life is considered nostalgic?
I'll say yes to that, so we can move on.
I think that you have nostalgia, for sure, when looking back at your past life. But I understand Danny's frustration with the idea that someone so young could have
nostalgia. Yeah, nostalgia all the way back in 2014. What? Come on, man.
You're just old.
That's what this really is, man.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's what this is about.
I'm so tired.
Brandon Coleman will also drop an OG Bobby Johnson coming up at 5:45.
Teaser.
Caught up with him at practice. Next, though, areas where Jaden Daniels can be sharper this year. Are there any? Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I would just say more so playing the situation game-like, as game-like as possible. Like, first and second downs, try not to take a sack. If it's not there, throw the ball away. Work on the second play. Never know. I might be lucky enough to break a sack one time and keep my eyes downfield and let those guys work. But other than that, always just trying to make it as game-like as possible.
Jaden Daniels in his press conference today at training camp. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So that is my area for Jaden Daniels to keep getting better. It's not like it was a weakness last year or terrible. It was very early on, but he got better and better at it. And let's be honest, if you look back at last season and the way he played, there weren't really weaknesses. I mean, he had arguably the best year we've ever seen by a rookie quarterback. And you're picking nits to try to find areas where he can be better or improve. But I want him, when he leaves the pocket, to keep plays alive and throw the football. I'm trying to find the stat that I'd saved from a couple weeks ago, but I saw data that was put out on the young quarterbacks last year and the percentage of the time when they left the pocket that they would go on to throw. And he was, I think, worst of all of them in that, which is to say, when he pulled the ball down, he was mostly running it. Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, some of these other guys were kind of stopping, resetting, throwing. And he's a better runner than them. So that's baked into that equation mentally in his head too, I would imagine. Those guys can't rip off some of the gains right that he can. But if that percentage comes down notably this year, I'll be really, really happy. And I actually think it'll also mean that he has made major strides as a passer, because it just means you're thinking more about throwing the ball, keeping plays alive for your guys that can then turn instead of your 7, 8, 10 as a scramble. You know, that's where you get your 15, 20, 25, or that home run he threw against the Browns, if you remember.
I mean, to try to quantify some of this stuff in terms of how really, truly great he was last year, things like on-target percentage, he's among the league leaders, better than guys like Patrick Mahomes last season. I say that again. He had a better on-target percentage of his passes being in the right spot than did Patrick Mahomes last year. Better than a slew of guys, MVP Josh Allen, right there with Lamar Jackson and company. His bad throw percentage, meaning where you go, oh, that's just a bad throw. Again, a better set of percentages than stars in this league. Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott, guys that have been around forever. So that level of stuff is way too sophisticated for most rookies. And yet there he is, right? Not throwing it in the traffic, not throwing it in the danger. There's always going to be that push and pull where we're looking for more production. We're looking for those touchdown numbers to go up, for example, right? That might mean more 50-50 throws. That might mean more, hey, let me throw this one early, like against Cincinnati, the Terry McLaurin, before he's even open and let him work. Sometimes that turns out negatively. I mean, that's what you have when you have a higher risk, higher reward type profile. So you add up some of these incredible numbers and you go work and you improve. You don't want to change the DNA of who you are in search of some, you know, ghost that we're all chasing, where a guy throws for 60 touchdowns and no interceptions. That doesn't exist, right? There have been a few of those, you know, God-tier seasons that Aaron Rodgers turned in with like 50 TDs and 5 interceptions or something stupid. But for the most part, you just keep kind of turning up that dial nice and slow, adding a little bit, kind of like you're talking about. It's probably what, once every 2 weeks where he scrambles outside the pocket and instead of taking 7 yards, finds someone downfield for 30? Yeah, add to that. But those aren't giant seismic changes for someone that's already pretty damn great.
No, I mean, but those are the margins that if you can
absolutely
go from a 7 out of 10 to an 8 out of 10, an 8 out of 10 to a 9 out of 10, you know, you can sustain the level he played at last year against different competition or a more prepared defense that now knows some of your nuances and subtleties. It's how you make the leap from being a top 10 quarterback in the league last year to being a top 5 guy in the league, or being almost an MVP candidate, who maybe should have been, to in week 18, you're one of the 2 or 3 favorites, and you're a finalist, and at the award show at the end of the season, you're sitting there and we're wondering, is he going to win the MVP award, a la Lamar Jackson last year against Josh Allen? Let's go to the phones, though, get your thoughts. 800-636-1067. Jaden Daniels was incredible 1 year ago. Going to be hard for him to be better, but realistically, where might he be able to make a stride? Let's go to Jesse in Bristow. What's up, Jesse?
Fellas, good to talk to you. First off, I want to say when you all were out at the Manassas Bowling place where you guys did the show out there, I can't thank Danny enough for being so accommodating. I brought my three daughters up there. It was the first on-location gig there, and it was awesome.
Oh, it's awesome, man.
I will say, oh, man, you guys are awesome. It's just awesome, awesome, awesome. But listen to you every day. So, really, my two concerns are this. Last year, I mean, Grant, you said he had an awesome year. Didn't start out that way. It looked like he was a rag doll getting thrown around the first, like, maybe 2 to 3 games. I think they kind of took the Band-Aid off and started letting him throw. And I don't want that start. I want him to kind of hit the ground running. But also, man, I'd love to see him get out of bounds a little bit sometimes like Lamar does. For some reason, you know, Russell Wilson and Lamar never get really popped. And I'd love to see him get that, like, spatial awareness and be able to get out of bounds a little more. That's it. I mean,
his timing got better and better. He used to do this thing. Thanks for the call. Where he would get to the sideline, he would do that, like, skip or, like, a jump all the time, over-diving defenders as he went out of bounds. It was almost like he was toying with them a little bit. Like, he would get that extra yard and get out of bounds just in the nick of time.
Mm-hmm.
You remember this?
I know what you mean, yeah.
He almost always avoided the big hit at the sideline. But there's no real reason for that, whatever that, like, thing is that he does, the little spin or the jump. Or again, it sounds like it's a complaint. We're picking nits here. It's all to just keep you healthy, buddy. We
love you so much.
You're so good. We just need you on the field. That extra yard is not worth the possibility of, even if it's a fringe dirty hit or a penalty for 15 yards, if you got to miss a play or a drive because you get knocked into the bench or something, that's not good for anybody.
Right.
Let's go to Jermaine and Bowie on Grant and Danny. What's up, Jermaine?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, bud.
Real quick. So, this morning, Mark Rippon was on with the Junks, and he mentioned that year they won the Super Bowl, that in preseason, Joe Gibbs would stay super vanilla. I mean, whams, right, dive left, you know, short passes. He wouldn't show anything. You know, they kind of did that with Jay Daniels this year. Cliff Kingsbury kept it really vanilla. I mean, he even got kind of upset when he threw that bomb. I think it was to Dami Brown.
Yeah, the Jets game.
Talking about the preseason, the check to the deep.
40-yard shot. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, And Cliff Kingsbury was like, hey, you know, let's keep that under wraps. I think Cliff Kingsbury, and I say that to say that he's a very smart coach. You know, Gibbs was a smart coach. He didn't show anything until the season. I think Cliff Kingsbury does, you know, is doing that too. But I think this year, I think Jaden's going to take a step because I think there's still more to Cliff Kingsbury offense. I mean, he was dealing with a rookie last year. I think he put stuff in slowly. But I think this year, I think he's going to probably evolve Jaden a little bit more. And it's kind of tough to find something Jaden could work on because he really is like, he's right on it. I mean, you guys are right. He's right. He's got to look downfield maybe a little bit more when the play breaks down and he scrambles. But it's almost like, you know, we're nitpicking because it's almost not a lot that he needs to work on. I just think he needs to stay consistent. You know, keep the progress going.
No,
yeah, buddy.
We had a baby coming a couple weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. We cleaned our house. We had the kids away at my in-laws. My wife and I had a couple extra days. We're waiting for the baby to come, which took forever, by the way. And we had nothing but time. No kids around. So we just kept cleaning. Clean one room, clean another room, clean another room. And finally, I had already booked like this cleaning service. We never have a cleaning service at my house. I wish we could do it like every week. It's amazing. You and I have joked about it. That's one of those things where you know you're doing pretty well if you can have a cleaning service. You know what I'm saying? But I had booked someone to come to my house just to scrub everything because we have a baby coming and you just peace of mind. Like, I don't want any germs, any whatever. By the time Monday rolled around and I had this cleaning service coming out, our house was so clean. And so my point is when they came in, they're like, okay, what do you want us to do? And I'm like, do some dusting, like, hi, like maybe you could vacuum under some couch cushions in the basement. There just wasn't a lot left because we'd just been cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. That's kind of what we're doing now with Jaden Daniels. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the cleaning service is here. Like, where should we start?
We're dusting. We're doing a couple little things here, nuanced things. But yeah, there's not any major stuff based on last year. That also doesn't mean that every year is linear. It doesn't mean it's going to be that same way. He might come out and throw. I don't think it's going to happen. But he could have 3 interceptions in the first 2 games when it took 7 games or whatever it was last year to get there. Like, it's not going to be just constantly better than the week before, the month before, the season before.
Right. He was a better player by the time they played Atlanta in week, whatever that was, 16, than he was against Tampa Bay in week one. I think that's pretty fair to say, right? He was more comfortable. Even in that Atlanta game, a great defensive play, I forget the name of the linebacker, who sold the hell out of a totally different coverage, dropped back into a lane, made it a brilliant defensive play on a pick against Jaden Daniels. I guess you could technically say that was on Daniels because he throws the ball and it goes on his ledger, but that's going to happen too is my point. Like, these defenses are good. They've done nothing but figure out how do we stop this guy. The same way Washington's offseason was how do we deal with Philadelphia and how do we stop Barkley and how do we counter this offensive line? Everybody else's offseason includes defensive coordinators and people staying up late at night going, what do we do to disrupt this guy? And maybe we'll take a page out of that book. So to your point, the progress will not be linear. There are going to be good weeks and bad weeks, et cetera, good months, bad months, and so on, especially if there's injuries that like happened in the middle of the season last year. But at the end of it, we should be able to look back, add it up, and go, okay, look, I know we had like a stock market little up, down, up, down, up, down, but look at the over time, the mountain peak is a little bit higher than it was before.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Brandon Coleman started his career at tackle, got a call this offseason after the Tunsil deal to say, actually, you're going to move to right tackle. No problem. Then they draft Josh Connerly and they say, actually, you're moving to left guard. And he said, no problem. You'll hear from him next on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Brandon Coleman is the starting left guard of your Commanders. He was, at one point in time, a starting left tackle. And as you find out in this interview, thought he'd be a right tackle before finding out he was going to be a guard. He's having a good camp, though. Today, Dan Quinn was asked, which young player on the team has impressed you the most at camp? And he singled out one guy, Coleman. Caught up with him after practice.
Yeah, you know, I take it a day at a time. It's hard when I'm like really self-critical of myself to kind of see how far I progress at times, just because I think there's always something to progress on. Like yesterday or the day before, there might be things I do good, but I also think there's always things I need to improve on. And going against the guys I go against is always going to be a great help, because I go against probably JK or Kinlaw every day, and that's a guy that's going, you know, he's going to get you, but you're going to get him back. Like, it's always a battle every day, and you know, I just take it day by day. So being able to kind of like hear, okay, this is where you're at, work on these things, this is where you're at, these are the things you improved on, can be very good, but I mean, just staying very self-critical and thinking about working on things day by day.
Is that something that you're coming up with what you want to work on, or in a meeting room or in a meeting with a coach after practice, are they saying, hey, let's tighten this up? Like, how do you know what to work on?
Obviously, coach has point is like, OG, he does a good job like helping me out, but there's like the whole offseason things that I want to work on personally, and it might not be technique things, like a lot of the folks who are on pad level and running off the ball, being stable in that position. So those are kind of my pointers. And then every day I just see little things. Like, coach might say, like, oh, your feet. But I'm thinking also about, like, hand placement, marrying those things together, just kind of little tweaks, maybe my body position, my balance, my eyes. So those are kind of little things that I work on top of what he's telling me. Because, I mean, there's only so many practices you get, you know what I mean? So you have to fit as much in as you can. So every rep I take something else to focus on. And at some point, everything's just going to marry together.
Commanders lineman Brandon Coleman, you mentioned being hypercritical of yourself. How did you feel about your season last year?
I mean, it started off, it wasn't a start that I wanted, for sure. Like, with the injury coming in training camp, obviously I just had to kind of roll into the season. So that preseason is what I missed out on, which would have been, like, just great to be able to get a feel for everything. I mean, it is what it is. So sharing reps with Big Luke, you know, makes it hard to get a feel on things. I mean, he felt the same way. Like, as a lineman, it's hard to get a feel on the game if you sub every series or you take one and take two series off, you know what I mean? So kind of once I got to week 8, week 9, when I took the job, it felt a lot more comfortable being able to be out there, kind of go through a flow of the game, see how players play, the rotations, how they play differently. It made me a lot more comfortable out there, but also took the game kind of and slowed it down. And that was what I see in camp. Like last year was just very quick in terms of like, oh, I got to go here, got to go here. There's a lot of thinking. Right. But now kind of have the playbook down. I know the system. On top of that, I can just work on my things. You know what I mean? I don't think about a million different things. I know what to look at, and I just work on my own game.
You played at a level last year that I think nobody would have been surprised if they just went into the season and you were still the starting tackle. But they go out and draft Josh Connerly. Did they tell you they were doing that, or did you find out when the rest of us did? And did you view it as any kind of slight or did you always feel like whether it's guard or tackle, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm going to be a long-term answer here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they had a responsibility to tell me. Like, it's a business, you know what I mean? And I told them from the get-go, like, when I got drafted, whatever y'all need me to play, I can. If I told them, if you want me a center, I may need a season. But, like, guard, tackle, it don't matter what size. So I found out just as y'all did in the draft. Obviously, I was, like, surprised. But I was also excited. Like, I said, new guy in the group, hella talented. Like, humble guy came in and very professional. I mean, they called me, like, I think that next day and told me, like, hey, we're moving you to left guard. Want to let you know. And, like, that's why I appreciate it, because I was one of the first guys they called, because that way I can model my whole offseason off of, like, what I need to work on.
Who called you?
It was DQ and AP. Same thing when they got Tunzel. You know, when we got left tackle, they called me, like, right after they got him. I was the first guy they called and said, hey, we're moving you over to right, just so I can work on my things. And, you know, that's why
I appreciate
it.
You got two calls.
That's right.
We're moving you to right tackle. That's hey, right. We're actually moving you to left guard.
Yeah.
They had you on speed dial.
But, you know, that's the way the world works. And at the end of the day, it's going to make our room better. Like, both of those guys are great guys on the field, but also those guys, like, just men. And I'm just excited to be able to be on the field and share that field with them.
Lastly, just going inside the guard, how does that suit your skills in a way where you think maybe you can make a leap? I think about Cosme. You know, not that he couldn't have cut it at tackle, but he became a really good guard right
for
away.
Sure, yeah.
Like, do you see that in any way, like, in yourself?
I mean, that's what I strive to have. I strive to have a good year and, you know, be like one of the cornerstone guards for this offensive line. And like I said, I'm just working every day to become that guy for this team. But it's been good. You know, I have a lot of length I'm able to use inside. Like, arms are a lot longer than you kind of see inside. So being able to marry that, you know, with, like, quick feet and just adjusting my game to the inside is going to be, you know, exciting to see where I can get to. I'm just excited to be able to share the field with the guys again week one.
Commanders left guard Brandon Coleman. What about in your life off the field? Are you more settled now? I'd imagine you've got a place you're not still moving into like you were a year ago.
Yeah.
You got your spots you like to go to. Like, how different is life right now?
It's cool. Like you said, I got a spot last year straight out of OTAs before we kind of went on the break. And we just got a dog. You know, we got I got a wedding coming up in April. So we're preparing for that. And, you know, everything's kind of just settled. Like, I have everything kind of on the plan. I don't have a million thoughts everywhere. Now I can kind of just focus on ball, and I'm grateful and thankful to have my fiance Emily next to me, who, you know, she might think the fall camp schedule might be a little tough at times because I'm not home as much, but she understands. You know, she's been with it through me for 6 years in college.
Her in high school or meet in college?
We met in college, my sophomore year, so she's been with me through it all till now, and she's just very supportive of everything that I do.
Do you have any specifics on the wedding? Like, when I got married, I told my wife, whatever you want, I got a couple things I really need. Like, yeah. Do you have anything like that where you go, hey, let's make sure we do this?
Not really. I mean, we get married in Houston. My family's obviously, like, from the Dallas area, and then the German family flying in. Her family's from Houston. So I was told the food got to be good. DJ got to be straight, and everything else is up to her. You know what
Live
I mean?
Band or DJ?
DJ, for sure, to get kind of everybody's music taste going. But, yeah, we're just excited to be able to get to that moment, and we're planning and getting things done right now.
Congrats.
Appreciate it.
What would be your one item of wedding advice for Brandon Coleman?
Budget an actual moment to eat. Like, put it on the itinerary. Have your wedding planner or whoever's in charge keep everybody away from you. Find a secluded place where no one can bother you, and you and your wife can take a break or a moment to sit down and actually eat the food that you paid so much money for. That's my advice to everybody.
He actually was saying, like, I was talking about, you know, being married or whatever. And he's like, so what'd you guys do? And what I said was, my advice would be, if you can, have as many people come in the few days before the wedding as possible so that you can actually spend some time with all your buddies and the people that you love.
That's a great one, too.
Because that's what we did. Like, people came in. I remember going to Top Golf the day before with a bunch of my groomsmen. We like, went and got shaves and haircuts and all that stuff together. And it was still, to this day, the last time that all of those buddies of mine and I, 7, 8 years ago, whatever it was, were together. Because everyone's busy and kids, and there's very rare opportunity where everyone just stops everything they're doing and says, I got to go do Grant's thing. It's your wedding. There's not another time.
Yeah.
So if I'm him, that's one thing I would say, is try to get everybody together. All right, we're 6 minutes away from the trade deadline. Still no news on Josh Bell. Would be a stunner if the Nats didn't trade him. And on Mackenzie Gore, who I'm hoping they trade, but we've said all along, all day long, we're not expecting that they would. Might be hard to get ownership to bite on that. There is two deals to discuss, at least from today, and five total now for the Nationals, as they traded Kyle Finnegan to the Tigers and Alex Cole to the Dodgers this afternoon. But as soon as we return, we will know for sure, with the final deals being made up against the clock here in the waning minutes, what they decided to do on the Bell and Gore fronts. Remember, we were on the air, the trade deadline, this has been several years ago now, but we came back, I think it was a 4 o'clock deadline at that time, and like it was like 4:02, 4:03, and we're like, I guess this is all the moves
they didn't do it.
And then we found out, yeah, they actually have traded John Lester, and they actually got something for him, Lane Thomas. He's a big league outfielder.
Lane Thomas, who is this?
Well, no, he was already in the major leagues as like a decent player with the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he'd been in the major leagues anyway.
Yeah, he was their fourth outfielder.
I'm like, oh my God. They got a big league player who's like got control at 26 years old and has some power for John Lester's 70 ERA. It was just like flipping the bird to fans as he left Nats Park, allegedly. Like, what on earth is happening here? And sure enough, two-time organizational player of the year after that. So every now and then you can get a deal in right at the horn. So we'll see if they do. As soon as we return next on Grant and Danny.